And there's something about suspenders, when you put them on, you want to say something racist. Like, there's something like, I think they're the racist belt, is what suspenders are. Like, you just want to start a sentence with, well, now, didn't expect to see you here. Like some version of that. Trekking heavy or traveling light, there's one thing that's right wherever I go. That's where I am. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Welcome to This Week in Zoltan. I actually wrote down the episode number. It's 348. Doesn't that make it so much better? Now you know, and I know, and you know how many there have been before, and I know how many I've done and have not grown in viewership. Isn't that something about podcasts? You're like, this is podcast episode 1250. We still don't have a sponsor. But thank God, you know, I figured out a way to continue my habit of podcasting by finding other means to pay for it. I don't know. I'm feeling good. I got Emma in the studio. We got Tom on the ones and twos. It was fun having you here last week. That's why I brought you back.
Thank you.
It was nice
to be here.
It was nice to have you laugh at stuff and then yawn at the end.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. Your yawning lets me know when to wrap it up. I'm massaging my back. That's what I'm doing because I pulled a muscle in my back dancing at a wedding this weekend. That's where I was at. I was doing a lot of this action, a lot of pointing. This is me at a wedding. First part of the wedding, I was very nervous because I was best man. I had a speech to give. And this is my childhood best friend since we were 12. So it was like very important. And I was on nerves like that whole weekend. Mm-hmm. The night before, accidentally did shrooms. I was trying to microdose some shrooms. And then my buddy Jason, brought chocolates. And I thought he said they were microdose. And I'm like, how many squares? He's like, two. So I took two squares. And then about 30 minutes later, there's like waves coming under my feet. And I was like, I don't think that's a microdose. And then I'd never done like a full ripper of shrooms. I think that's what they call it in the psychedelic community. A full ripper. And I just felt the waves coming. And I was like, oh no. And then slowly everyone's faces were upsetting me. And the bar had neon lighting, kind of like this stuff. So like everyone's face was a different color, like some of them red, some of them blue. And they would just come in close. And I eventually had to like go outside. And then all my friends came to check on me, like mother hens. They came to all check them. They're like, are you okay? And which has made it worse because now there's a bunch of big glowing faces in my face. Are you okay? And I'm like, leave me alone.
Kept saying, everyone's heads are too close.
Yes. I kept saying that everyone's faces are too big and too close. And there's too many people for a conversation. Like I could only handle a one person conversation. More people were coming in. And also it didn't help that every time I made eye contact, because there's like a whole, everyone at the bar we knew. It was all people, we had just done the rehearsal wedding. So like, it was like 10 of us in there, mm-hmm. and I knew everybody. But every time I made an eye contact with a different person in our group, they would just go, whoa. Because they would see my eyes, and I'm sure my eyes were just floating, just wide-eyed, and like, hey, I'm terrified. And they're like, whoa, are you okay? And I'm like, no, I'm not okay. And Dane, the groom, He's a drug professional, so his advice is just ride the wave, man. It's going to level out eventually. And I'm like, no, it's not. I am drowning in the wave. Like, he was on top of the wave. He was surfing like some neon monkey with like lizard fangs. And I'm in the wake of the wave, just drowning, hoping for the lifeguard to come get me. So we had to leave. We lasted about 30 minutes at the bar. Mm-hmm. And I had to get out of there, and we went to the Airbnb, and I just watched the curtains breathe. I saw the curtains had veins in them, and they were like pulsating. And that was cool. And then the sheets on the bed were like they were all crumpled, and it looked like a breathing nutsack. Like it just kept inflating and then deflating, all wrinkly, and then inflating and then deflating. And I loved that. And then we Uber Eatsed some Pepto Bismol because I was about to throw up. Yeah, it was like a $25 Pepto-Bismol that we got. Mm-hmm. And you had to go out and pick it up, and the driver just looked at you like what the hell?
He just gave me a look like, oh, that's for you.
No, it's for the guy that's staring at the curtains who thinks he's going to throw up his $20 cheeseburger. because the shrooms have turned on him. But you know what it made me realize? Have you done shrooms, Tom? And I know Emma's done shrooms. Maybe. I don't think so. And did you have a good experience?
Yeah, the first time was bad, but I didn't go crazy. And then I was like, all right, let me up it a dose. And then I was like...
Okay.
It was kind of scary, but it ended up being okay. But I couldn't do it at a... if I did it at like a bar anywhere where there's a bunch of people, I did it like outside
right
on the beach with like one friend who had done it a million times in like the winter, kind of. I don't think I'd be great with that many people around.
That's exactly how you're supposed to try it. Yeah. And I thought we were getting into a microdose type situation, right, which I've done microdose, and that's the most Emma's ever loved me, is when I've taken like four little capsules of microdose and I've just like walking around all positive going, you know, life really is beautiful. If you really think about it, you could look at something ugly and find the beauty in it. And she's like, who is this person? I love this person.
Yeah, your eyes smile when you do it.
Yeah. That's so funny. That's what Layla said about Jason too. His eyes started smiling. And so that's what I wanted to have. I wanted to have that level of joy in an already joyous situation. I'm like, let's just up the joy. And then I didn't realize that it was a full dose. And because I would have never wanted to do shrooms full on in that setting. I would have wanted in nature. I've heard from so many people, go to the beach, go to the woods, and go stare at the clouds or whatever. There's already a stump that we've named the psychedelic stump at Prospect Park, near where we live. Because the first time we walked the park, there's this big tree stump, and these two people were just laying on it, looking up at the clouds. And I'm like, oh, those people aren't shrooms right now. They're just staring at it. I'm like, that's the psychedelic stump that we will use one day. But instead, I did it at Molly's Saloon in Ramona, California. It was a horror story place to set up to do shrooms. Just neon lights. Every TV was on. There was a live band setting up, and I was like, I couldn't handle them walking in with their big instruments. They just had big cases and big boxes. And I'm like, I can't handle that, let alone the noise they're about to make. So we got the hell out of there. But that was an experience. First time doing mushrooms, being able to withstand about 30 minutes at the bar until I had to retreat back to the Airbnb. That's me, dude. I have a low tolerance, I think, for all of it. I remember the first time I did an edible. That was with Dane, my buddy who we went to, you know, he got married this past weekend. We were maybe 18 or 19, or we went to some high school friend's wedding that we weren't even that close to. We liked him in high school. He's like, oh, Bob's getting married. We should go to his wedding. I'm like, okay. And we went, and nobody else from our high school was there. It was just like his close family and her close family and then us in the corner. So we left after a while, and we went to his grandfather's place, and he had a dirtbag cousin at the time who was living at his grandfather's house. And he kept offering us weed to like smoke out of a bong or something, and we kept saying no. It's like, no, I don't want to disrespect his nice old grandfather's house, you know, by being all silly. So we all turned it down. And then like the fifth thing he offered us was he opened his freezer and he pulled out these cookies out of the freezer, which now I would know that's marijuana in those cookies, because why else would you leave cookies? But I was 19, I didn't know that. So I'm like, that's where he keeps cookies, in the freezer. That's probably to keep them fresh. And he's like, would you guys like cookies? I'm like, hell yeah, I want some cookies. So I ate a whole cookie. And then I remember it was kind of rude because I ate the whole cookie and he took the rest of the cookies away. And I'm like, why would you assume I only want one cookie? Why would you assume I don't want like four or five cookies? But I was like, whatever, I'm not going to push it. And I ate the whole cookie. And I remember it tasting kind of stale. Now I know that flavor was weed. But I was like, these are some stale cookies, but I'll eat the whole thing. And then I remember about 30 minutes later, we're outside in his grandfather's big backyard. And we're staring at the lake. And he goes, has it kicked in yet? And I go, well, has what kicked in? He goes, the cookies. And I go, what? And he's like, yeah, those are weed cookies. And I was like, why? Why would you do that to me? And I just remember we were playing with bow and arrows, and then Dane shot an arrow and it hit the tree. And for some reason, that was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my life, was this arrow hitting this tree. And I just started laughing maniacally. And Dane's like, we got to get out of here. And I was like, all right. So we left, went to Subway. I ate a foot-long tuna fish sandwich. And then, yeah, foot long. I couldn't even go 6 inch. I was like, give me the whole 12 inches. I got the munchies, baby. So I ate a foot long tuna fish sandwich. And then I remember we got back into the truck to drive home, which is 40 minutes. And that's like, that's such a long, like, I remember in the beginning part of the drive, my eyes were crossed. I couldn't uncross my eyes. Every time I opened my eyes, they were crossed. So I just kept my eyes closed. And I remember one time we were on the freeway and I opened my eyes and I see Dane driving like this, like Cheech and Chong, like nose to the wheel. And I look and he's doing 50 miles an hour on the interstate. Speed limit there, 65. Everyone drives 80. And he's doing 50. And I go, you're going too slow. You have to speed up. And I remember he took a long pause and he's like, feels like I'm hauling ass. And I was like, no. And then I crossed my eyes again and just fell asleep. But really, I was just in my head, and I was imagining me vomiting marbles for some reason. And then I opened my eyes again, and he had missed our exit. So I said, dude, you got to get off. You missed the 78. And then he got off, and we're driving, and I go, you need to pull over. I got to throw up. And he's like, now? And I'm like, now, dude. And he almost pulled over in the middle. And I'm like, the shoulder, dude. Like, not in the median, on the side. And he pulls over, and he didn't pull over quick enough. So I just, like, blew foot-long tuna fish sandwich all over myself, all over the side of his pickup truck door. And then I'm just like, but there's more coming. It's 12 inches. So that was that first blast was only, like, 2.5 inches of this stuff. And then I open the door, and I'm just, like, vomiting hardcore out onto the street, and I just hear Dane going, I thought he was saying police, police, the police are behind us, but he was actually going, please, please stop throwing up. That was his way to get me to stop throwing up, was just begging me to stop. And then after that, he's like driving back to his parents' house. We both still lived at our parents' house, and now I'm covered in vomit. And then we get to his house, and I get out of the car and I start following him to his house. He goes, where are you going? And I go, I don't know, can I go inside and clean up? He goes, no, dude, you can't come into my house. My parents are going to know we're all messed up. I'm like, well, can I at least hose off the side? And he's like, no, dude, get out of here. So I'm just covered in tuna fish. I have to get in my car. I drive home like this. I get back to the trailer park. I take my shirt off and I just throw it in the dumpster because I'm like, well, that's done. So then I'm trying to sneak into my mother's house without a shirt on and with vomit on my pants. And I come in and my brother, my little brother, who's like 2 years old at the time, or no, he must have been a little older than that, maybe like four. He was like all the way in the kitchen down this long hallway. But my mother's not there. I'm like, this is excellent. I can sneak in to my room and she won't know. And I can just pretend I don't feel good and sleep. And she goes, my little brother's sweet little voice, what happened to your pants? And why aren't you wearing a shirt? And my mother's like, what? And so she just sees me. And I got a giant wad of puke on my pants, no shirt on, no undershirt. So I'm just coming in, tits out. And my mother and her, she's like, Zolika, what happened? And I go, I had a bad tuna fish sandwich and I threw up. And she goes, oh, my boy. And I go, yeah, I'm going to go to sleep. I don't know why I have the accent. I'm going to go to sleep. I got to get out of here. And then I just remember I slept for like 12 hours. And that was, yeah, I don't know what it is, man. Dane's gotten me. That wasn't even his fault, the mushrooms or the weed. But for some reason, when I'm around him, these stories tend to pop up. So, like, that wasn't the most heartfelt story of Dane and I, but, like, his wedding meant a lot to me. He's my best buddy from when we were 12. So I was, like, worried about the speech. I was worried about doing the best man duties, well, you know. I was like, oh, I'm going to mess up and forget to bring the suspenders or something. That was our outfit. We had suspenders, a white shirt, blue slacks. And I'd never worn suspenders before. You ever worn suspenders? They're the closest I've ever felt to what women go through when they wear dresses, where they're just constantly adjusting. Like, it keeps sliding off your shoulders. Like, because everyone's not built like Larry King. Remember Larry King? He had, like, a weird camel hump shoulder, where his shoulders were big, then it duped down, then his neck came up. So his suspenders just sat perfectly in his valley of scoliosis or whatever he had going on. But most people don't have that. So this thing would just keep sliding off throughout the evening, even no matter how tight you made it. You'd like move or dance. So the entire time we're just like readjusting. And there's something about suspenders, when you put them on, you want to say something racist. Like, there's something, like, I think they're the racist belt, is what suspenders are. You just want to go, like, you just want to start a sentence with, well, nah, didn't expect to see you here. Like some version of that. Suspenders are a mixture of, like, wearing a dress and adjusting the straps. With a little bit of that Southern racism kind of just sprinkled in. It's the attire for that. But the speech ended up going well. I was nervous for it. But it went good. Told some stories, got out of there. And then once the speech was done, my stress levels came down. Mm-hmm. And I started dancing. And I pulled a muscle in my neck. That's what happened. I pulled this one muscle. It starts in my neck and it goes down to the middle of my back. And I don't even remember doing it, but it was probably one of these. I just remember I was clapping a lot, and the way I was clapping, you were like, you look like a dork. Like, what are you doing clapping?
It was a lot.
I was having such a good time.
It was just a lot.
I was such a good time. I had drinks. Ah, it was so fun. There were cigars. It was exactly what you want from a wedding. It couldn't have gone any better. So it was a wild weekend. We had a little bit of everything out there. And then we also went to, we had that show in Salt Lake City. I did a private event for a group of structural engineers in Salt Lake, and that went better than it should have. I kind of never knew what structural engineers did, and I actually wrote a joke that kind of, based on their reaction, I could tell that I nailed it. Because I was like, structural engineer, so you got buildings, so you've got to make sure buildings are level. So you're pretty much the people that come in and ruin like an architect's dreams. You know, like an architect wants to be all wild and you come in and you're like, all right, easy there, Picasso. You can't make a building out of isosceles triangles. And then you got to level a couple of these out and they like erupted over that dumb joke. And I was like, all right, I kind of figured out what structural engineers are. They come in and they make sure things are level, as opposed to the opposite of our apartment, which has no structural engineering involved, just sloped floors.
It's awful.
Yeah. Our bed is broken. We talked about this on the other podcast. Our bed is like this.
We sleep on a hill.
Yeah, we sleep on a diagonal hill, and so it's ruining our mattress. We bought a new mattress, but now it's all lumpy and uneven, and it has to be because the floor is uneven, because that's the second mattress we've ruined since we've moved in. So, yeah, I was trying to make friends with these structural engineers. But it's just so funny when you have to win a group of people over. You know, like if someone goes to a comedy club and sees you and in the background it says Gotham behind you, or they went to the Cellar or whatever, and you're there, they assume you're going to be good. There's an assumption of talent because they bought tickets, they showed up. But when you show up to the banquet room of a city hall, and they had just given away some scholarships and a couple lifetime achievement awards for structural engineering. And then they go, oh, we have a comedian now. Here's Zoltan Kassis. And you walk out there that's the entire introduction, no preamble that there was going to be comedy. It's the first 10 minutes is just proving you're funny. It's just like, trust me, I'm going to try. And you're going to have to meet me halfway. And there was just a moment there, like there was a few beats where I'm like, I could go without all this. Genuinely. There was like a bored 13-year-old girl in the front. Remember I sent you a photo while you were at the hotel? I sent you a photo and she was in there. And she was bored during the speeches. And her demeanor didn't change when I came up. She just thought it was going to be more speeches. And she didn't get any of the jokes. And she just stared at me. I could see in her eyes, she was like, praying I could turn into Taylor Swift. Like, she's like, man, if you could turn into a tall blonde woman playing the acoustic guitar, you would really cheer me up. And I couldn't do it. I just had to continue being myself. But we survived. We got out of there, clogged the toilet at the hotel because they shut down the water. That's happened to me so many times. Because I hold a number two, knowing that there's going to be a hotel bathroom coming up. And then I got into the hotel and then did my business, went to flush the toilet. Nothing happened. turned on the sink. Nothing happened. And I yelled out to Emma. I go, call the front desk. I think the water's turned off. And she goes, yeah, yeah, the water's going to be off for a few more hours. And I go, great. Well, this is staying here, and we're not using the bathroom. And
I couldn't close the door.
It was one of those. It was one of these high, you know, these cool doors where it's a slider. It's not an open hand. They put on these big. Well, apparently, this thing had gone off the tracks. So it's like those crappy closet doors from the 90s where those got off the tracks, except this door's huge and heavy. So I'm like using all my might to close this door to keep this turd smell in this one quadrant of the hotel, and had to leave it there for a few hours. So it was an adventure. Did some shows in front of some structural engineers, did some shrooms, had a great time at the wedding. What else did we have? We had a stinky guy on the plane.
Ooh, that was so bad.
Yeah. This dude, out of all the stinky people I've come across in my life, this one's the worst, and by a lot. Like, this guy smelled so bad, there's no second place in my category.
Same here.
Yeah. I don't have a second place. And it was that third world stink. You know, when you're on an airplane and you're like, oh, you came across an ocean. Yeah, like, this isn't a domestic BO smell. This is from a country where things are not going good. Like, this is where this smell's coming from. And I'm not going to tell you what country. I'm not even going to tell you what they look. You know exactly who I'm talking about. Think of the last time you flew and you're relating to this part. You know exactly who I'm talking about. And this dude came on and we smelled him before he got to me. All right. Emma and I were not sitting together. She was a row behind and over. And we were texting. And then I smelled this dude four people deep. He had a preamble stink, which usually the stink comes at the moment they're here and after they pass you, kind of like a truck going by, and then the wind catches you. Not this dude. He had a preamble stink. That means he had a hemisphere of stench to him that came to you before he showed up, which is extra impressive. And he came by, and I'm like, oh, man, that is rancid. And he left, and the stink stayed. That's how much he smelled. He would leave, but his essence was still there. And everyone's upset. Everyone's like, because I noticed it first, I think, and then I just noticed everyone else going, damn it, what is that? But they're not saying it. They're saying it with their face, but no volume, and just darting their eyes around. And once they realized who it was, they're like, ah, why would you do this? Why would you do this to anybody? You know, like, that's the kind of confidence I want, to know that I don't even know how to describe the smell. It's almost like they took a sick goat and filled it with every herb known to man, and then hit it with a bus, and then that thing died in the sun, and then you came by a week later, and then everyone's eyes were just watering. And this guy sat two rows behind me, and I could still kind of smell him. That's how bad it was. And I remember I had to get up to let someone in my row in, and I looked back, saw where he was. He had a window seat two rows behind me, and there was a girl sitting in the aisle. And I made eye contact with her, and she had the saddest look on her face. Her eyes were watering, like she was chopping onions. And she's like, what do I do? She was almost like a desperate plea to anyone she could ever make eye contact with, like, what now? And I just like, I don't know. And then I sat down, and then she sprung up, went to the front of the plane. I thought she was going to tell on the guy and go, hey, you got to get the stink monster the hell out of here. We're going to die. We're going to die. And no, she went up and got a mask. She got a mask and put it on. I'm like, that ain't going to do nothing, dude. That might keep some COVID spores from coming in, but that's not bringing in any, that's not holding out any stink. It's not a K95. This was a, I'm a barista and we're trying. Like, this was one of those masks. And she sat down, so now she's got a mask on. And then I remember before we took off, I looked up to see if anyone had that middle seat. And there was a middle-aged dude who had that middle seat. And he just had this, like, I can't even explain it. He had a look on his face that was almost like, what did I do? What did I do to deserve any of this? Like, I didn't do anything. I was just trying to fly home. Maybe I shouldn't have bought the Delta economy ticket where I board last and they sit you next to third world stink. But it was rough. It was rough.
It was a long flight, too.
5 hours. Yeah. It was, and it didn't get better, dude. It did not get better. It was a relentless stink. It was like, you know when you eat kale that's not braised? And it's hard to eat. And the more you chew it, you're like, it's just enough to swallow, but it never gets soft. Mm-hmm. It's just raw kale. That's the best way I can describe how that person smelled. Relentless. It was like, oh, maybe I'll get used to this in an hour. No, you won't. It will find a new way to stay relevant and fresh in your nostrils. It was incredible. Incredible. And then before we left, I was Googling, can you like complain? Do they kick people off for smelling bad? And I sent you that article when I was sitting there. Because there's so many articles of like stinky people getting kicked off of flights. It's a thing. If enough people complain that someone's like ruining the air quality. That's how they put it, which is such... That's more offensive than you smell. I would rather someone tell me, hey man, you stink, as opposed to you're affecting the quality of the air for the for your fellow passengers, which is the speech that they use to tell people. And the first article came up and it was this flight attendant's account. And she's like, I had 10 people come up to me going, there's a couple in the back of the plane that smell horrific. You have to do something. And she's like, those two might be the worst jobs you could ever have, is flight attendant having to break the news to people that you smell too bad to fly, or detective having to go to a family and tell them you got a family member that's dead. Like, those have to be the two worst. I don't know which one I'd rather do. Because at one of them, you get to leave and go work on the case. And the other one, you have to wait for their reaction to go, are you going to leave? Because otherwise, we got to sit in this situation. Those have to be the two worst. Looking a human being in the eye going, your body odor is ruining the air quality of this Boeing 747. And we can't take off.
You got to do it before you take off, man.
You do. That's the other thing. You have to make the stink. You have to make the complaint along with, I don't think one person can do it either. I think it's got to be a community. It's like Survivor. You got to be voted off by the island. And so I think more than one person needs to complain. And then I think the flight attendant needs to go check it out, like talk to them. But really, I think they're just doing a whiff test of their own. And then they got to go tell the pilot. And that was the thing in this article. So she went up to the couple and she's like, good Lord, they smell. And she's like, it was the worst thing I've ever smelled in my entire life. That's how she described it. And then she had to go tell the pilot. And she goes, it can go one of two ways. The pilot can either be like not care because he's got his own air in his little cabin up there and go, well, deal with it. We're about to take off. Or he can be cool and go, all right, yeah, let's get them off the plane. But he's the one that kicks them off. So like the flight attendant goes to the couple that smells and goes, hey, the pilot would like to talk to you, which at first must seem weird. You're like, oh, are they going to give us wings? Yeah, are we going to take a selfie? Did we get upgraded? What's happening? And then the guy, the male and the couple goes, what's this regarding? And then she had to do it. She goes, it's your body odor. It's too much for everybody. And they want to talk to you. And he goes, we're not leaving. The guy goes, we're not getting off this plane. And then so he goes to the pilot, relays that information. The pilot goes, if you don't tell them to come up here, I'm going to get cops on this plane and have them physically removed. And then so she relayed that, and then they had to go up, and the pilot pretty much told them the same thing. You stink. We can't fly with you. And they got kicked, and he was like, I'll never fly this airline again. He yelled that out, and I'm like, good. Dude, you can't smell like a bus passenger on an airplane. That's for the bus. That's for Greyhound. You know, you can't do that. And it's, man, do they not smell it? Is that what it is? I think it might be. What herbs and spices cause that? What Colonel Sanders herbs and spices that are not on his chicken make you reek like that?
I think if it's bad enough, they should emergency land the plane. Really. That's why.
I think that was in the article. They're like, if the extreme example they gave is like someone with a catheter or a colostomy bag, like if that rips open and then everyone's dying, I think they would land the plane and be like, we got to put this down. Yeah. Because I remember one story. This is a comedian story. that I was told this comedian did a show at a casino, and the show went so well, he crushed. And he was going to another casino, and the heads of that casino, like the Native American tribe that was in charge of it, they're like, "We're gonna go with you, and we would love to see your show again at our other casino." So they're on this little plane, this tiny little private plane. There's only like 6 or 7 rows, and the flight's only 30 minutes. But I guess the comedian ate something before the flight that was not agreeing with him, and he's like, as they were taking off, he grabs the flight attendant and he's like, "I'm not going to be able to wait." He goes, "Is there a bathroom on this flight?" And there was. Apparently, there's an FAA regulation that means no matter how small the plane, you got to have a toilet on it. I don't know if that means for Cessnas, like those tiny ass ones, but like if it's a passenger plane, you have to have a toilet. And she goes, "We'll be landing in like 30 minutes. And he goes, "No, no, no. I can't wait 30 minutes. This is happening right now." And so she's like, "Okay." And then she walked him to the back of the plane, which was like 2 feet, pulled up the cushion of the last seat, and it was a toilet. And so it's just a regular airplane seat, but she pulled the cushion off. It's a toilet. And then she pulls up a privacy screen, which only goes up to here. So his head's sticking out for everyone else in this tiny plane, and unleashes what only you could imagine would be so bad that you can't wait 30 minutes for it to land. And he goes, people are gagging and coughing and dying, and they're trying to circulate air. They're like, "We're going to circulate some air," but it's circulating the same air. So they got reprieve for like 10 seconds, and then it came back with the vengeance. Like, there's not enough Febreze. I don't care how many dryer sheets you have in the vents. Like, it's going to come back what it is. And then he landed. And supposedly the higher-ups from the casino didn't come to a show that night. All those people on the plane skipped his show that night because they had the flight from hell, man. Yeah, that's quite enough of that. There's nothing better than bad smell stories, because I think everyone can relate. There's something about, you know what's so funny? I actually felt bad for the guy, because there was a part in that flight where I couldn't smell the smell. And I was like, that poor guy, he's probably traveling from a long way. He's headed to Salt Lake for whatever reason. And we're all here, like, and he stinks, and he just couldn't help it. And I felt bad for him. And then when we landed, he got up to get his bag, and I smelled it again. And I'm like, I hate him again. Like, as soon as the smell was gone, I started to feel bad and, like, have sympathy. And then as soon as I smelled it again, I go, die, dude. Like, you need to get off this flight before we all throw you off as a tandem. But, yeah, I think that was our weekend, wasn't it? We also visited my mom. Mm-hmm. That was cool.
She's a nice lady.
She's very nice. I remember she was, my mom likes to brag about how much money she saves. She told us where she keeps the cash. I guess I shouldn't say that on the podcast. My mom doesn't trust the banks. But she, I just remember we were sitting there having lunch, and my mom's like pointing out all these things that Carlos, my brother's dad, built by hand, you know? And then I pointed out the table, because I remembered the dinner table was this glass top that I guess broke. And then he put a wood piece over there and painted it. And then my mom's like, "Oh yeah, he did that." And then she goes, "You know these chairs?" And she pointed at the matching chair set. She goes, "They're from the trash." And Emma just starts laughing, going, because that's not what you expected. I thought she was going to say, "Oh, he made them by hand or something," or they're imported from Turkey. He found them in the trash, and then he fixed. Oh, you can't tell. And I was like, "Jesus, Mom. All right, yeah, tell Emma."
Real wood.
Real, yeah, it's real trash wood. That was her point. She's like, if you buy like some IKEA thing, it's like that compressed wood chip crap, and she goes, "No, this is real wood, but it was in the trash for quite a while, and but we refurbished it to make it something." So it was good to see. Yeah, it was good to see my mom. Did she do anything else?
Cash in the Tupperware.
Yeah, she had cash in the Tupperware. We can't tell them. Well, it's not like people know where she lives, but she's like, my mom's always hid cash in Tupperwares, and I used to do a joke about it, which was true, because she would be like, "If I die, the Tupperware cash is in the closet." And then she would move it every couple weeks and tell me where it was. It was like her version of changing the passwords. Like, she'd be like, "This week it's behind the couch." And now she changed it to where it's this Tupperware with like that's mislabeled. Yeah. What did she mislabel it as? Rat poison?
Cockroaches, rat poison, and like something else.
Like you would keep that in this whatever. But that's, and she's like, this is where it is. Just in case she ever does.
The thieves off.
Yeah, it's in case anyone breaks in, that'll throw them off the scent. Oh, we're not interested in cockroaches. She could have put something else. She could have just put like miscellaneous tax paperwork or just something boring, you know? Isn't that? I don't know. That's who my mom is. What else do we do? I'm still on the search for a good boxing gym. That's we were talking about that. I'm not going to say the name of the one I'm currently going to. I've gone to a few in the city, but I feel like they. I almost want to open a boxing gym myself. I think it's kind of how Vince Vaughn's character ended up opening Average Joe's gym in the movie Dodgeball. Because he was like, right? Because he was like, oh, that gym's too douchey. This gym's not right. Yeah.
That's my favorite comedy of all time.
Dodgeball's great.
And no one else is with me on that.
I'm not going to say my favorite of all time, but...
That's
I'm,
why everyone's like, are you sure your favorite? I'm like, yes. I think it's the funniest script ever written.
It's the greatest concept I've ever come up with, like two gyms battle in dodgeball and one's a bunch of steroided jacked up freaks and the others are a bunch of everyday just non-athletes. Like, yeah, I'd watch that movie. It's one of those movies kind of like Blades of Glory where you hear the description and you're like, I'm sold. Will Ferrell and the guy from Napoleon Dynamite are figure skaters and they're the first male figure skating pair. You're like, make that. I want to watch that now. And I've already seen it. But yeah, dodgeball is just... What's your second favorite, if you had one?
All right, it really is. I think my favorite, but I have like a grouping of like three or four, like my weekly quotable movies.
Okay,
but I'm a huge Napoleon Dynamite guy, people are either like I don't get it, and I'm like then don't talk to me, or they think it's the funniest thing ever. And then probably Wedding Crashers.
Yeah.
Everyone says The Hangover and Superbad, but I think I've just seen them so much, I'm kind of sick of them. But like Dodgeball, I know. I watched it with my girlfriend. She had never seen it. And I got every single line as it went through. And she's like, this is not good.
Were you doing this? Because I do this to Emma all the time. When you show your girlfriend or your significant other like something you really love, where you're just like, you know, you just keep looking at them going, right? With the... Check this part out, you
all
know, and you're kind of ruining the movie for them.
Yeah, she's like, it would have been better if you didn't do that. Yeah. Been,
too bad. But I still wouldn't have liked it.
I quote that movie like at least once a week.
Oh man,
it's just Ben Stiller as a villain is the funniest thing ever. He's the same exact character in Heavyweights. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yes. Also, love Heavyweights.
He's playing the exact same character. It's just too funny.
Yeah, nobody makes me bleed my own blood. Such a good line. Heavyweights, by the way. Underrated, yes. 90s comedy. I love that. Did you ever watch that movie? It was a fat camp. So they took all these fat kids to this fat camp, but Ben Stiller played this fitness psycho guru that just bought the camp. And all the other years, it was a fun camp where kids wouldn't really lose weight and they'd have a really good time. And then he took it over and he turned it into like military, like psychotic training, and he was starving them and they were sneaking food. And one of my favorite scenes is they're doing their weekly weigh-in and the first kid comes up and he gained weight. And the second kid comes up, he gains weight. But he's they're filming it. He's doing like an infomercial for this fat camp. So every time he's like, get on. He's like all Mr. TV, get on up, high five. And he'd see the weight, cut the camera. And my favorite one was the last guy. He was Goldberg from Mighty Ducks. And he goes, get on the scale. And he doesn't even have both feet on the scale. And he just watches the arm go. And he goes, get off the scale. Turn off the camera. Like he was viciously. It was beautiful. I love that movie. A little dark, really, if you think about it. For a Disney movie, a little dark. Definitely fat shaming. There's no love your body, like body positivity going on. Like there's none of that. It's a great, great comedy. He was playing the same character in Dodgeball. That's psycho. Ben Stiller's amazing. He's really, really good at what he does. I don't even know what got us there. Oh, the douchey boxing gyms. Yeah. That, we really veered there, didn't we? I I feel like I need to open a boxing gym that's not like where boxers train, and it's also not trying to get people that don't like boxing to like boxing. Because I feel like those are the two gyms out here. They're either like hardcore gyms where real fighters fight, and which is a little intimidating for me, so I don't want to go there. And then there's also this other one where they're trying to make it, like this one that I go to, they have this downstairs like cardio boxing thing. It looks like a nightclub. You walk in, it's dark with like neon lighting. Like it's so dim, I can't tie my own shoes down there. I feel like a old person at a trendy restaurant. I want to like pull out my flashlight on my phone to read the menu, and I'm just all grumpy. I'm like, I can't wrap my hands. I can't see. I'm doing everything on feel. And then finally I get all my gear on, and the trainer has a stage, and he's yelling out what we do, but he's also the DJ. So they're pumping club music, just bounce, 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 bounce. And then the beat will stop. The music will stop. He goes, all right, now left hooks. Bounce, bounce, bounce. And then now you're doing left hooks. All right, now dip into. And then I'm like, this is embarrassing. You know, like the trainer was wearing boots. Like he was wearing shorts. You know when people dress like complete knuckleheads. I'm saying it as nice as possible, but like you just see people, like some guy will wear like knee-high rain boots with shorts because it's New York, you know, but they're usually not training a boxing class, you know. This guy's dressed like he's a famous DJ or something, and he's over there like yelling stuff at us, breakbeat. And then at the end he's like, all right, let's stretch. And we're in a yoga pose. And he starts giving an end of yoga class speech. I don't know if you're familiar with like an end of yoga class. If you go take a hot yoga class at the end while you're in, what's the pose called? Where you're crisscross. Yeah, you're in Shavasana. And usually, you know, the girl who's teaching the class, usually it's a girl, will have like a top knot, and she'll give you some speech of like, you know, I realized how important it is to have gratitude. I just taught a yoga class in Mexico and none of the children had any feet. And I just realized that we should be so thankful for our feet because there's no kids down there that have any feet. And namaste. That's actually, that speech that I just told, kind of what I heard once at a yoga class. There was some version of like the kids had injured feet. And this is the exact same speech this boxing guy gave us at the end. We just did DJ nightclub boxing, and he didn't even turn on the lights for the speech, so we're still in this like dim cocaine mood lighting. And then we're down there in Shavasana, and he's like, just remember, you're your number one trainer. If anyone's, the world's gonna try to bring you down, but you can bring yourself up. And I'm like, shut up. Like, you've taken the worst aspects of every gym I've ever been to and you put it into one 45-minute class. Dim lighting, loud music, and inspirational speech. Like, if you need an inspirational speech at your workout class, you're not ready to work out. You're not ready. Get ready. You know what I do to get ready? I'm in the room. I'm at the apartment. I put on Canelo fought this weekend. He was fighting Charlo. And remember before one of the days we went to work out, I put on the epilogues where they do the hype video. And then they talk about both fighters. And Canelo's like, I started fighting at 14. That's a horrible accent. But he's like, I started fighting at 14 and I've learned English and blah, blah, blah. I want to be the greatest ever. And then they go to Charlo. And Charlo's like, I trained in Texas. I'm from Houston. I have the heart of the city in me. I'm a lion. I'm ready to kill somebody. That's supposed to get you pumped up. Not some guy in rain boots and shorts giving you an end of workout speech going, legless Mexican children should really make you think about your footwork next time. Get out of here. That's why I need to open a gym. I just don't know. I definitely don't have the capital. I don't have the capital, but I want to open my own boxing gym and pattern it after the one I left in San Diego because they did it right. They had the right balance of like, we're going to teach you stuff. It's not just going to be you aimlessly throwing punches at a bag, but we're also, it's not going to be douchey, and it's going to be comforting at the, like, welcoming at the same time. Wasn't BoxFit all of those?
It was great. They weren't trying to appeal to, like, all the markets, you know?
Right.
I feel like the ones here are trying to appeal to everybody, like beginners, advanced. Over there, it was just, like, a mid-level.
Yeah. It's I don't know who these nightclub boxing clubs are trying to. They're trying to appeal to people that live in, is it Soho or not Soho, the Lower East Side? Is that where all the young cool people live? Yeah, it's like they're trying to appeal to young, cool people that are looking for a place to work out where they can take a photo. Yeah, and it's not good. But maybe it's good for business. Who knows? Maybe they're over there printing money. Like, the class was busy. So I guess people are into it. But it just chaps my ass. Because I just figured, you know what I was thinking? I was like, what if, like, the next Mike Tyson is at this class, you know? And he's just like, you know what? I'm going to go into DJ music instead. I was going to be a boxer. And I decided to wear rain boots with shorts and try to be a DJ guy instead of being the champion of the world. I don't know. But I guess you can go to Gleason's and you can go to these other gyms if you want that kind of experience. It's a little too intimidating for me. But yeah, we're going to find it eventually. Till then. How are we doing on time? 45. Nice. What else? Didn't we watch the Alien show?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the last thing we'll talk about. We watched. No, they have a new series on Netflix called Encounters, and it's all these, like, it's just documenting aliens. So the first episode starts with the United States military and all the video that they've released of, like, them capturing UFOs flying around. And then they interview a guy who worked for the military who's on a battleship during the Gimbal sighting. That's what they named the sighting of this UFO in 2015. And then they interviewed him, and then he said after that happened, he was obsessed with the video, and he got a promotion to where he had to move to the Pentagon, I think, and he became a higher level security analysis person. And as soon as he got the promotion, every week he was visited by aliens in his bedroom. They would come and, like, right? See? No. That face you made, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Because if I heard you tell that story to me, I'd be like, nah, dude, you lost your marbles. But the fact that this guy was in the military and you hear him tell the story, and I'm like, I kind of believe you. I'm like, if you weren't of sound mind, I don't think the military would have given you this promotion. Yeah, they would have cut you, you know? And he ended up leaving. Because they weren't, like, totally honest with all the UFO stuff, he left 2 years before he would have been, what's that called, tenure? Or he would have hit his pension. Mm-hmm. So he could have retired if he stayed in the military 2 more years, he could have had his pension and retired and military pensions, mm-hmm. like, great, you know, insurance and all that crap for the rest of his life. He turned that down because he felt like they weren't being honest about the alien stuff with the public, and they weren't, like, honestly looking into this stuff. So he walks away from the Navy and from the military. And then a couple years later, now, you know, they just had the congressional hearings, like, a couple months ago, where the military was talking to Congress going, yeah, this stuff is happening. We don't know what it is. And we can't, you know, we have nothing that can take it down. And we don't know what's going on. But that's what the series is. And then it starts there, and then it goes to, like, Encounters. Like, the next is a school in Zimbabwe in the 90s that... Yeah. And then the next after that was in Ireland. Was it the Brits? The people
somewhere in the UK.
Somewhere in the UK, they had a similar experience where they just had, like, hundreds of UFO sightings from all these different people. And then the last one was Japan after the Fukushima... tidal wave, you know, after the earthquake, and then the nuclear reactor was, like, acting up, and then all these UFOs were seen in the sky, like, all these weird lights would show up over the generator, and then they would go away. And they measured that, like, the amount of radiation went down by a lot when they showed up, and then they went away. It was almost like they were helping us. It was almost like, this is going to kill you, you dummies. And then they, like, took some of the radiation, or they needed the radiation. Maybe that's their go-go juice. I don't know. Whether they were trying to help us or for their own benefit, these lights showed up, and then the radiation levels went down, so, like, the whole thing didn't explode. And apparently, there's reports of them also doing that in Chernobyl. Like, there's weird UFO sightings over Chernobyl when that disaster happened in the 80s in Russia or in the Ukraine, wherever Chernobyl was. Anyway, I'm a lunatic alien person now. That's all it took. All it took was the congressional hearings and then watching this four-episode thing. And I'm like, oh, no. Is that Alex Jones guy right? Because I remember I listened to him on a Rogan podcast, and he opened the podcast admitting he was wrong of saying the Sandy Hook mass shooting was like fake people, like it didn't happen. And he apologized. And it made me think, oh, this guy's like, maybe he's not crazy. And then his next rant right after that was he's like, military officials are dropping acid to talk to space aliens. And I'm like, what a lunatic. And now I'm like, is he? Like, is he right? Like, I hope he's not. But also, I don't know, it's pretty interesting.
I believe it.
But yeah, it's so persuasive.
It really is.
You take, all it is you take a 5-milligram edible and you sit down, you could tell me a documentary that my mom is, was actually what Jeffrey Dahmer did, and I'd be like, Mom! Like, how dare you? There's something about it. It's a, like, we grew up in writing class writing about persuasive essays and things like that. There's persuasive documentaries, and all these, I'm in, dude. You could make a documentary about me. I don't know, what's like a wild thing? That I walked on the moon. And I'm, like, I'm 100% sure I've never walked on the moon. But I think Netflix could make a documentary that said this man doesn't believe that he's walked on the moon. And I could watch that documentary and go, hot damn, I think I walked on the moon. I think I kind of remember walking on the moon. Yeah, I stepped in a puddle. My sock got wet. I was all pissed. Like, I think I kind of remember walking on the moon. And I don't know. I'm into all the documentary stuff. The alien stuff is fascinating. Even though at the end, I liked how they set it up. First episode was military. So there's like footage, and then they're interviewing someone that sounds credible because he doesn't, you know, he's like a high-end person in the military and he's admitting to this stuff. Next episode, school children encounters. Next episode, a county in the UK. And the last episode in Japan, the episode ended, remember, with the yoga teacher? Mm-hmm. That she's like, I'm an alien. So it like, they dipped you in good. Because if they would have swapped those episodes, and the first episode was that...
We'd stop watching.
Yeah, yeah, the Japanese yoga teacher going, I'm an alien. Be like, turn that off immediately. Yeah. I'm not watching this yoga commercial. But because they did it in the right order... It's like, at the end, you're like, I am too a star child. like they dip you. That's how conspiracy theories work. They get you on one thing, and the next thing you know, you're shaving your nuts before the apocalypse. I mean, I assume if that was the conspiracy theory. But we had a good time watching the alien stuff. Drop an edible, 5 milligrams, put that on. Next thing you know, you're watching E.T. with, I don't know why I hit E so long on that one, but you watch E.T. with bated breath. I don't know. I think that's the episode for this week. You guys have been wonderful. Thank you for listening, downloading, sharing, subscribing, doing whatever you do. If you would like to see me live, I am always on tour. Go to ZoltanComedy.com and subscribe to my mailing list and come see me live. Other than that, ciao, everybody.
Trekking, heavy or traveling light. There's one thing that's right wherever I go. That's where I